everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4 RuCap here on Reality TV Rehab. My name is Mike Bloom, making my entrance with roses as well in bloom to talk about the premiere of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4. We have been sufficiently hyped for this cast. Did they deliver on that promise? We shall see. First, let me bring in my co-host. First, let me welcome in Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you?
Hey, everybody. I was going to be shady in my introductions here, but I don't think anybody could be as shady as Gia Gunn, honey. We're going to talk about her. Love Gia Gunn.
Well, she did have a parasol as well during her kabuki routine, so she literally was the shadiest queen this evening. And of course, we would not be here without the lovely Miss Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm great. I will be shady. I got my wig down from the rafters, so now I'm ready to go. And I have my stapler, so we're all good.
Perfect. And so, Liana, I mean, she might have to take a comedic tutorial as to how to fashion that wig to her head via staples, but you know what? Pain is beauty.
Stunning.
All right. Well, let's get into this episode, because there is so much to dissect here. First, let's ask a general umbrella or parasol question. You know, this, it seems like our Drag Race All-Stars premieres have sort of followed a typical fare over the past three seasons, right? We have our entrances, we have our reading challenge, our maxi challenge is the variety show where they can basically do whatever they want, and then a lip sync for your legacy and first elimination. So now that we're sort of going through the motions here, overall, Brent, what did you think about this premiere? How do we think the introduction of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4 came out?
I thought it was great. I really enjoyed this episode. The one thing I didn't enjoy was one of the contestants on it. I'm just going to get this out of the way right at the top. I think that Jasmine Masters was a waste of a spot. I know some people coming into the season said that about Pheromone, but the real waste of a spot was Jasmine Masters, because you know what? She don't give a fuck. She doesn't give a fuck about being on All-Stars. She doesn't care about anything. Like, seriously, you're going to come onto RuPaul's Drag Race in a suit that you've worn before that, oh, by the way, wasn't even pressed. Oh, by the way, that doesn't even have shoes to match. Oh, by the way, with some hair that you apparently borrowed from Monet Exchange with a kitty girl wig. Girl, bye. Girl, bye to you. Like, seriously, I wasted my time with you. Somebody else who really wanted this. You can say what you want about Pheromone, but bitch, she wants to be here, okay? She wants to compete. She thinks she has a chance to win. She wants to prove herself. Jasmine Masters just wastes my fucking time on episode one, and I am so glad she's gone. Girl, bye.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
I mean, everything else besides Jasmine Masters I thought was really great. I love Latrice and Manila coming back. I thought they fit in great. I thought Trinity was absolutely stunning. I thought there were a couple of great surprises in Monique and Gia. I thought there were a couple of flops in Monet Exchange and some other people we'll talk about. But overall, I thought it was a really great time. I know that it was basically the same thing as episode one of the third season of All Stars, where they do like some talent variety show at the beginning. But you know what? This is your time to shine. Basically, RuPaul, here's the thing. RuPaul's giving you every opportunity to succeed in this first challenge. It can be whatever you're good at, whatever you can do to impress us, whatever your drag is. And we saw plenty of people being very on brand, very meta with their drag in terms of what they have done in the past and what they were doing right now. RuPaul is giving you all the opportunity in the world. You get to pick any entrance look you want, come in, wow the folks, although some people didn't wow us, especially if you're wearing a black jumpsuit. And then you get to come onto this stage at RuPaul's Drag Race in front of a crowd that's there, and then they're there because of you. They love you. I guarantee you, all those gay and lesbian veterans and service people who were in the crowd, they were there because they wanted to be there, not because they're being paid to be there, okay? And then you got the judges who are hyped to be there. They want you to succeed. You can do whatever you want, okay? And still, some people failed. Why did they fail? I think because they really didn't try to wow us. They decided to stay in their comfort zone. And I'm sorry, I'm not here for comfort.
I think for me, I know that it's a formula now. You know, you have the queens come out, we do the reading challenge, we have the pageant show, the talent show, I guess, whatever you want to call it. I still love it because to me, you know, it's a reality show and it's still sort of a sandbox. It's all about the queens. It's all about the people who are cast on the show. And
yes,
to get to see them make conscious choices or Well, a conscious choice to not be prepared, apparently, if you're Jasmine Masters. You know, like, that's what they get to bring in this episode, because it is so open box. You know, I mean, it's a quote-unquote talent show, but you see from Trinity to Latrice, there's a huge range of things that you can pick that you get to do. And that's what's so much fun, I think, about what I love about this first talent show is because it's so open-ended. And you get to see the queens pick what they think they're good at or what they think is going to be entertaining. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but all of it is just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think we talked during the draft about how maybe it feels for some reason that this cast, maybe more than the other All-Stars cast, has a really interesting diversity in terms of their types of drag and the way that they do things. And granted, during the talent show, we did sort of lump some things into some other categories, but there are some really fun talents that I'm really excited to talk about. And I totally agree, Liana, that I think the premiere is always going to hinge on the contestants, since now we sort of know how it's going to run generally. And again, I'll repeat what we said ad nauseum in our draft. This is just such a fun cast. It's a really great mix of personalities where it truly does feel like, you know, I have a sense as to like who would win certain things, but it doesn't really feel like, you know, there are blockades of people forming or there are big storylines happening. So it really does feel like we can go anywhere at any point in time. It's a really open field, and that makes me extremely excited. I will go back to a point that you made, Brent, that I want to throw out here as well before we get into the episode proper. Do we think, is this the most meta season of Drag Race ever, even only in one episode? Because it does seem like we have a lot of self-referential stuff from the queens, which makes sense. I feel like, especially in this day and age when being a drag queen is all about promoting yourself as an artist, you come out with songs around certain memes that you do, it makes a lot of sense. But to actually bring it back to the thing that made you famous in the first place, it's a really interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, Liana. I don't know what you think, but like, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race is now, like, this is its 14th season. Okay, so they had 10 regular seasons, 4 All-Star seasons. It's at about the point in Survivor's history where they started being very meta, I feel like, during like 13, 14, 15, 16, where like they're referencing things that happened previously, or the show would talk about something that happened previously on All-Stars, on season 6, on season 10, you know, something that the show is known for. And I feel like these queens are at a point where they sort of embracing that, and I do enjoy that. However, I will say that some of them succeeded better than others. If you are somebody who took what your brand is and, you know, that you were known for in the past on RuPaul's Drag Race and you elevated it, it's the old Project Runway rules where Heidi Klum is always like, you know, did you make it? Did you take it beyond what it was? Okay. So, you know, there were people who did things that they've done before. Latrice has done her flag routine before. Manila has done that painting thing before. Bob. Oh my God. Monet exchange did with the sponge thing. Basically, like, you know, there were things that were very meta within the contestants, but you know, did you take them beyond what they were? And if you didn't, I feel like you were less successful than the people who, you know, really tried to go the extra mile to wow us, to realize this is All-Stars, bitch, okay? And by the way, I just want to say really quickly, I know that I can sound a little dour sometimes because that's just my natural state. But honestly, I had a great time during this episode. I was not displeased in any way with the overall result and with the overall impact it had on my entertainment. I was just really let down by a couple people. That's all.
You have resting bitch voice. It makes sense.
Yes, exactly.
I was going to say, I love you like angrily telling us that you had so much fun. I had so much fun. I think in terms of the self-referential stuff, like, I love a good callback as much as the next girl. I think it's fun. But I think because there was so much of it this episode, it did start to wear on me a little bit. Yeah. And in terms of the, oh, did you elevate it to the next level? I think there was definitely some queens that did that a little bit more than others, but I thought, and we'll probably get into this later, in terms of the judging, that felt really uneven, especially comparing like Monet and Monique, for example, because I didn't think there was that big of a difference between the two of them in terms of the self-referential stuff. I mean, Monique like brought the house down. That was great. And Monet did have her, you know, she's even going to go so far as to recreate the like fake jump split thing, which was like, oh, okay, come on, girl. But still, in terms of the judging, I just felt that was really uneven. So that wore on me a little bit. But yeah, I mean, a lot of referencing their own stuff, which I still say wore on me a little bit, but was fun.
What I will say is, and maybe this is me being overly optimistic, I think we're sort of one and done with that. I think it's because their first challenge was essentially do whatever you want, and you have people like Monet, Monique, and even Valentina referencing the things from their Drag Race past. I, in a way, sort of also saying, like, I'm beyond that. I can show I can take this negative and turn it into a positive. Your results may vary. I feel like, you know, it's going to be a little harder to put Brown Cow and Stunning into, like, Snatch Game. You know, so I feel like while it may have been heavy in this episode, it's going to lighten up, which made me say overall, like, I'm fine with this. I'm enjoying this because I know it will not be forever.
Yeah, I concur with that. And I think overall, I mean, like the challenges on RuPaul's Drag Race are so constricting. And that's why some people succeed and some people fail. It's because some people are great drag queens, but they do not fit into the constraints of whatever is being done on RuPaul's Drag Race. And I do feel going forward that we're really not going to get much of that at all.
Okay. Well, this is maybe a little bit of an aside, and it just popped into my head. This was supposed to be the All-Star Spangled reality show or something, like a patriotic talent show. I thought that they were then supposed to be patriotic in their talents, and I was confused when they were not patriotic. Was it just that it was the, you know, the veterans that were watching the show? Was that the only thing that had to do with the patriotic bit of it, or it, no?
Liana, aren't we enough for you? Like, us LGBT veterans, are we not enough? Like, come on.
I think Brent's mad that he wasn't invited to it.
I was. Yeah. I'm a little perturbed. I'm a little mad about that. No, but yeah, I understand your confusion about that. And but I sort of understood that it was basically they could do whatever talent they wanted, and they were just there to entertain the troops, basically, or you know, the veterans or whatever there was. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many actual active duty troops were there, but I'd like to know. My number is 77. Oh, never mind.
Oh boy. Well, let's get into the episode proper before Brent starts giving out his social security number. So let's start by talking about some of these entrance looks, and we'll start with the main eight that got introduced before they bring in the surprise that was not a surprise in Latrice and Manila. Liana, which ones stick out to you for good or for bad reasons in terms of these entrance looks of these first eight queens?
Okay. Well, I really liked Valentina's look. It when I first saw her walk out, so this was sort of the like black, I think it was latex is what it was made out of, but I got this is like a super classy version of Alaska's like trash bag look. And I thought that it was a lot of fun because it was still like super, super feminine on top. And then just this like weird balloon shape. I don't know. Maybe I just wanted to touch it. Like I was like, oh, I want to squeeze that. But I thought that I don't know what that says about me. But I really like that one. I also thought Gia looked stunning. I know that there was a lot of, you know, talk about Gia versus Monique Hart and their sort of religious-y heart patch kind of, you know, similarities between the two. But I thought Gia looked stunning.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Trinity Taylor on this one. Trinity the Tuck, as she's known now. It's going to be very hard for me not to say Trinity Taylor, by the way, so just deal with it. But I thought that Trinity the Tuck, she gave us a wow moment. Not only did she come in with that body bag, but then she had the Sarah Paulson-esque Prada dress from Vogue, or that she went to the Vogue premiere. I forget what it was, but she had Sarah Paulson has worn this dress before, and Sarah Paulson even like commended Trinity the Tuck on Twitter about how cool it was that Trinity decided to do a take on her dress, and it was all zip ties. And not only that, it looked expensive. But I know we've seen zip ties before. Okay, like queens have been doing zip ties for the past couple years, and it can get a little tired. However, this did not look like zip ties to me. This looked like plastic. It looked like, I mean, the way how the rigidity of the ties on the dress was such that I was very turned on.
Now that says something about you.
If you're about like proportionizing and shaping, might as well go with, I mean, like she said, she's made out of plastic. She might as well wear it. I mean, I think that coupled with like the actual entrance made for like the best presentation overall, which again shows that,
and
like she was here. She is here to perform.
Yes. And she, and not only that, she understood that this is her opportunity to really wow the fans. Like, this is for us. Like, you don't get judged on this shit. This is for the people on Twitter who are going, yes, queen, yes, work, bitch, work. And you know what? She gave us something. She said, you know what? You guys are worth it. I'm going to go the extra mile for you. RuPaul doesn't give a shit about that. I mean, she really doesn't. It's for us. And that's why I really stan Trinity the Tuck Taylor, because she really went the extra mile for us. Everything from the outfit to the body bag to the orange hair with the green dress and the makeup. I could have used a little bit more makeup. But besides that, it was a fully realized concept executed flawlessly. Thank you, bitch. That's what I want to
say. Okay. I love the craftsmanship. I mean, I didn't realize it was zip ties. And then knowing that, I mean, makes it so much cooler. But I'm not going to lie. The green of the dress and the orange of the hair is an assault on my eyeballs. It like, hurts my eyes. It hurts to look at her. But I appreciate the craftsmanship.
See, I love orange and green, but that's just me.
So yeah. Ugly.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I know that Monique, was it a little bit hand done or homemade? I guess homemade is what I want to say. Is it a little homemade? Yes. Is it, was the look a little bit much? Yes. However, she went there for us. She gave us a look. She was like throwing every freaking sequin and flower and crystal that she could onto that freaking thing. She was going to go out there and wow us. She's got some coin now. She was going to show it off. I would much rather have that. Then somebody, I guess we'll talk about the lowlights now. Monet Exchange. Bitch, what the hell? What the hell? Like, seriously, this entire episode, I was literally like, did we waste a spot on you? Like, why are you here? You came out and gave us a black jumpsuit, a black bodysuit for your entrance look after what you did on season 10, where you had that whole reveal and you had like the pushing with the sweep, you're going to sweep the competition away. Anybody remember that? That was great. This one was just so boring. Like, Liana, I have to believe you're with me on this one.
I feel like if she had come out in one of those tuxedo t-shirts, I would have been more impressed. No, I totally agree with you. And it's so funny because she comes in, she says, okay, I know what my flaw was. In her confessional, she says, I needed to step up my runway game. And I was like, all right, better looks. And then she comes out wearing this. I was like, no.
Same thing with Naomi Small. She comes out and says, you know what? Last time around, people thought I was just some pretty girl with legs. And that's all I was about was modeling on the runway. So what does she do? She comes out with an entrance look that's basically all legs and goes onto the goddamn runway posing her ass off. Like, bitch, please. So many of these were so hypocritical. I couldn't even stand it.
To be fair, I like the color on Naomi, at least. It was not as eye-assaulting as the green on orange, but I think the lavender lilac, even though, you know, it was just a few strips of fabric around her upper half, I think she was able to make it work.
I will give a little shout-out. Latrice Royale looked great, but it was a little expected, a little boring. I would have wanted something to wow me. Manila Luzon did wow me. Again, this is a callback to her Big Bird look. From her original season, she did Big Bird, but she elevated it to more than what it was. It wasn't just Big Bird. It was Big Bird being run over by freaking Drag Race. She didn't win. She has the little flag in her hand, which I thought was so hilarious. It reminded me of Serena Chacha with like the little flags that they criticized her for in episode one. Yes. Like, it was so funny, this entire outfit, and she had like the tread mark over it, and she had the one eye that was perfectly done with the makeup on the other side that was like all smudged and fucked up. Like, everything about it I thought was wonderful. Great job, Manila.
Oh my god, the Manila the details I think that she put into the look too, because the little like Big Bird on top of her head with the X out eyes and the, you know, band-aid on the knee, like that was just such a nice touch. It was really great to see. I was so happy with this look.
Yeah, I will say a quick shout out to Pharaoh Moon, who did, you know, the problem was it was predictable. It was two piece, pretty and predictable. That was the problem. Gia Gunn, I thought, looked great. Definitely looked more expensive than Monique Hart, but I actually got more out of Monique's drag than I did out of Gia's, at least for the entrance look anyway. And Jasmine Masters, I mean, girl, like, seriously. And you know what? I'm looking at, look at these pictures, because you can look at them side by side on the wiki. Is she wearing the same shoes in her entrance look as she is in her variety show look? Like, it's the same. It's the same damn shoes. I'll stop it. You know what? I'm going to take 1 minute. I'm a bitch, and then I won't bitch anymore about her. Okay. How do you take an opportunity to go onto All Stars? I'm sorry. You guys know I do this sometimes, but I just have to get this off my chest. Okay. Like, this is what happens on Big Brother. I start to rant about people And I start to feel bad because I'm harping on them so much. But seriously, you get asked to go on to All Stars 4, Mike and Liana. Like, seriously, no one thought that Jasmine Masters was ever going to be asked back onto RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, I was stunned when I saw that she was, okay, because of all the stuff that she said, and she only lasted 3 episodes on her season, and even those 3 episodes weren't really her best look. But she got asked back, so she's like, you know what, I got asked back onto All Stars 4. Because she's been performing now. People know her. She's the meme queen. She's got a little bit more money. Maybe not a lot, but a lot more money than a little bit more money than what she had before. And she's going to, this is my one opportunity to go out and wow the fans. And what does she come out with? She comes out with, I guarantee you that this suit that she walked in with the entrance look, and I know for certain the suit that she wore for the quote unquote stand-up routine wore things that she's previously had worn before in her drag race or in her drag career. And I just don't understand her thumbing her nose at the fans and going, F y'all. Because that's what I felt like when I was watching her. Oh, wait, rant done.
Jasmine Masters done fucked up entrance looks.
I mean, do you think, I feel like Jasmine's sort of pervading attitude throughout this is, look, people love me for being me. I don't need to necessarily elevate parts of myself or change who I am because I've been able to be successful just doing this. Maybe it's sort of just from the school of drag that she comes from that, like, I've been doing this type of thing for years and I've been making coin because of it. I don't necessarily feel like I need to create these big reveals. That's why I'm thinking she's thinking.
Then give a shit. Then give a shit about it. If this is what you want to do, then give a shit. Give me some bigger hair. Give me some shoes that actually match your outfit and different shoes for the runway. Like, make sure, oh my God, look, have you looked at her suit for the runway? It's not even pressed, you guys. It's not even pressed, for heaven's sake. I just, like, if you're going to do what you do, then do it well. Oh my God, I got a headache.
is doing her thing, I feel keeping like her hands in her pockets?
Apparently, yes. I feel like there are people who are listening to this right now going, Brent, get a freaking grip. Like, like, just calm down.
I think you need to loosen your grip around Jasmine Masters' neck.
Yes, well, there's that. I'm just like, I wanted her to succeed so bad because I love her. We all love her. She's funny. On social media, she's great. And she's willing to stick it to RuPaul's Drag Race. And sometimes, I'm sorry, they need to be stuck to. And she will do it. And she still got asked back. And she just totally shit on her opportunity. All right.
Okay, well, but seriously, she didn't take her hands out of her pockets during the entrance. Did, like,
maybe,
did
maybe she should,
that?
Maybe she didn't have her nails done.
I don't think she had her nails done.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's all I could look at.
Yeah, because in her runway look, I'm trying to see if she has her nails. She has her hands like in a fist, and she has her thumb in her fist, so you can't even really see. So I don't know what's going on there. She didn't give a fuck. She didn't give a fuck.
Well, let's talk about some other things that sort of happened amongst all of these entrance looks here. First off, you know, Gia talks about how, you know, since season 6, she's done this huge thing of self-discovery. And it's so interesting compared to cutting to Trinity, who essentially the edit sort of validates this, where she says, you know, like, I am scared that Gia is here. She's not the same person. She's worse. So, I mean, I think we can talk about, you know, if the edit is villainizing Gia or if she's just sort of being herself. But it's safe to say they really set this up from the beginning, Liana.
Oh, super shady. I'm just curious, where does it go from here? You know, because you have Trinity the Tuck set up this, oh, you know, Gia's coming for all of us. You know, she's going to read us the house down. And then Gia does. And then some. So now what? You know what I mean? I just feel like, oh, my gosh, like, are we just seeing the tip of the iceberg? Or are we trying to, you know, start this first episode with something, you know, hitting hard with Gia being shady towards the other queens?
Hmm. Well, let's also talk about another big element that involves some social media here, where Monet makes a remark of, okay, thank God there are no season 7 queens here. Spoke a bit too soon, Monet, as Jasmine Masters is the next to come in. And of course, Gia is the one to call Monet out on her bullshit and say, oh yeah, why did you not want season 7 here? Monet goes in on season 7 and season 9, says they're both boring. Brent, there was some blowback, I believe, from Monet's comments towards season 7. Were there not?
Yes, there were. And I will say, I will give some blowback to Monet Exchange myself for her criticism of season 9. That season was many things. Boring was not one of them. There were four fantastic queens at the end, all of whom I thought had a shot to win. Maybe, like, I mean, up until I realized what the finale was going to be, I didn't really think that Peppermint could win, but I really thought Trinity and everybody else, Sasha and Shay, all had a chance to win. I really, really did. So that was a fantastic season. That was the season with Valentina, and that was with who was the girl who got kicked off after Valentina? Nina Bonina Brown, and all of those queens were amazing. It was really fun. Anyway, about season 7. So a season 7 queen came for Miss Monet Exchange. I thought it was actually Violet because I thought it would have been funny if Violet came for her, but no, it was Pearl. Pearl. Lizon came for Miss Monet Exchange and said on Instagram, just to clear up this moment for Monet Exchange and anyone else, season 7 was cast as a fashion-forward millennial season, all in caps. Although there were fewer, quote, comedians on 7, we set a standard for the current and future generations of drag. We entertain people in different ways. Some ways camp queens cannot. It's us, quote, model drag queens that inspire young people to get into drag. It's not usually the other way around. This is important and not to be discredited. And I'm pretty sure season 7 queens, she goes on, have gone on to be some of the biggest successes, breakout in the most mainstream media, have the largest social media accounts, and have had their most dynamic collaborations since the show. So shut up. Of course, she's talking about Katya and Trixie Mattel and Violet Chachki with all of her fashion stuff that she does. So, and by the way, she juxtaposed what she wrote up against, like she had pink font with, like, the pink of the mirror and white font with the white of the mirror, and it was really hard to read at times. But that's what she wrote, and I was like, all right, queen, because I had a good time on season 7, and it was a little boring at times. But then Monet responded and said, all cool, but it was still boring.
Did I miss the memo that season 7 was boring? I love season 7. Like Ginger Minge, Katya, Kennedy Davenport is on season 7. Jasmine Masters, what? Was it Candy Ho? Did Candy Ho drag down the season?
I mean, what I would personally say, I mean, I'm a bit more in Monet's camp, and that I actually do like the season 7 queens that have come back and they've sort of proven me wrong. I think the issue with season 7 is, like Pearl said, yes, they might have cast more fashion-forward, look-oriented queens, but there were a lot of performance challenges, and a good amount of the time, you had, like, Ginger, and you had Kennedy, and you had Katya doing at least pretty well in all those challenges, but everyone else just stinker after stinker. So they just sort of, like, were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. If this was a more fashion-forward season challenge-wise, like season 3, it would have been incredible.
Oh, God,
but for me,
yes.
Like, I personally just wasn't as invested in them, especially coming after a powerhouse season like season 6, just because these queens were not exactly utilized to their best set of abilities because they were essentially being forced to challenges that they're not their best at usually.
Mike, that is such a great point, and I've never really thought about it that way, but honestly, what was the best episode of season 7 to me? To me, it was the premiere. It was that fashion show where they had, you know, winter and summer looks, or maybe it was fall and spring looks, I forget, but it was juxtaposed whatever they were doing against whatever season they were on. And they both came in. That was the wow moment with Violet Chachki when she had that reveal and Carson was like, oh my God. And everything about that was when Kennedy had that, like, you know, angel thing that she came out with. Everything about that fashion show was amazing. But then you move forward into the season with the performing challenges, and it really was a bit of a snooze. Like
Shakespeare.
Pearl try to do Shakespeare and, like, you know, come forward, you know, once upon a summer's dream, and like however Pearl talks, you know, like it was just like, it was so laughable. It was funny. But it was really, really bad. And then you have, like, you know, Jasmine and Kennedy screwing it up. And that was when Rue said the famous thing about, I've never seen a car crash like this. Well, if you'd been, like, if you cast it as a fashion forward season with millennials, then give them stuff that's more up their alley. Why are you trying to fit them into like the Bianca Del Rio of it all? It just didn't work.
It was such a disaster. Maybe that's why I loved it. Like their music video parodies.
Oh, yeah.
All of that.
It's like a fine wine. It's gotten better over time. Yeah.
Well, especially since bringing back some of these season seven queens, I think it has sort of like going to a Survivor example. Like, I think people are looking more favorably upon Survivor San Juan del Sur after the fact. Now that we're like, we love Jeremy. We love Kelly Wentworth. We love Keith. Like, now it's like, it wasn't so bad. I want to move on. Let's actually go from season seven to season nine here. A lot was made preseason about this Valentina versus Ferris stuff at the season nine reunion. Liana, were you surprised that a la Coco and Alyssa, they done buried that hatchet?
I mean, I guess maybe because everybody was speculating that, the only reason why Farrah is back is because of there's going to be this drama with Valentina. And then it was like, nope, psych. It's almost like, you know, those news stories where they tease you before they come back. And it's like, I don't know. Is there fish poisoning in your water? And then they come back and it's like, no. So I was like, oh, Valentina and Farrah, are they going to have drama? No. And it's over. And then it's done. So
it's clickbait.
I think it's clickbait, but on the other hand, I do think this is going to pay dividends on down the season. Like, you know, this is going to come up at some point. They're going to get into it. Somehow one of them is going to have power over the other one, probably Valentina, and Farrah's going to be in the bottom. And then it's like, well, are we still friends? Like, can we work together? And, you know, I think that maybe at that point we'll get a little bit of a payoff.
Let's hope so.
Let's talk a bit about confessional looks before we move on to the actual fare of the episode. Liana, any stick out to you for any particular reasons? Because granted, these are queens that we are hopefully going to be watching in these looks for the next 8 weeks.
Well, I mean, Valentina's, obviously. I mean, talk about self-referential. Like, she's literally wearing, an upgraded version, I guess, of the same look. Although, okay, her without eyebrows. So my mom always said, because my mom's an art teacher, and she would teach people how to draw. She was like, people need to have eyebrows. She's like, people always look weird without eyebrows. And so whenever I see Valentina without eyebrows, I get it. She does it for drag. It makes it easier. That makes sense. But whoever said you look like a turtle, that's all I can think about. I'm like, oh my God, she looks like a turtle. No.
I'd like to stay in my shell, please.
Yeah.
I'm thinking back to her original season where she only shaved off half of her eyebrows, remember? And then she wore like that, Hello, Mr. DeMille outfit for RuPaul when RuPaul came around. Yeah, I thought that Valentina was the clear standout. I think Trinity Taylor with the hat and the overall, again, it was a fully realized concept. And she's definitely had some work done. Since her original season, she looks a little smoother. Some of the lines have been ironed out. So I'm here for Trinity's look.
How could we forget about Monique with the cow on her damn head?
Oh well, my God. Yes. Well, you know what? She's got a new single coming out for the talent show. She released it on iTunes. Brown Cow Stunning. So that was her moment. I don't blame her for being self-referential there. And again, she it wasn't just like, she came out with a brown cow outfit. She had a freaking song with it. So I like it. And she has confessionals with it. So I like it that she took it beyond what it was.
Okay, but like at a certain point, don't you run that into the ground? Like, my song is Brown Cow Stunning. I'm wearing brown cow. I have a cow on my head. Oh, and I brought all this other cow fabric, which is apparently for something else.
Calm down, bitch. Like Mike said, like Daddy said, like it's only for episode one. I do feel like after episode one, like we're probably only going to get it in the confessionals a little bit, and then it's not going to be in the episode proper. So hopefully, fingers crossed.
I'm going to throw out every sponge and every little cow in my apartment. It's all getting out.
Yeah, Leon, I don't know how I feel about you keeping cows in your apartment in the first place. I think it's finally time we kill that habit. And I also, pink is pheromones, like color of choice. I'll admit, I think I liked her blonde more than her, like, stuck her hand in a cotton candy machine pink. But you know what? If it's her choice, she can do whatever she wants there.
And it was a choice.
It was a choice.
Also, Gia looks beautiful in confessionals.
Gorgeous.
Like,
and by the way,
hair's flowing. It's gorgeous.
We kind of, or at least maybe it was me who, kind of blah blahed over the whole Gia gun of it all. I am so thrilled to see her. I am glad that she has embraced her true self. I'm glad she's realized that she's not a man, that she's a woman who just partakes in the art of drag. I think it's freaking great. I love that they invited her back for RuPaul's Drag Race. I love it that she's not afraid to get messy. She's, and not like, here's the thing. she doesn't just do it in the confessionals. She will do it to your face when she calls out Trinity Taylor and Trinity the Tuck and says, you know, well, I don't know. I don't know if tucking is a talent. Like, I'm a little worried about you, you know? And I'm like, all right, girl, you know, let's hear it. I love it that basically she's me. That's the thing. She's me. And I love it that she's got a little Brent in her. That's all.
Well, let's get into these eight queens are summoned by Rue. They're coined super queens. But of course, in true All-Stars fashion, there is a twist. Here come Team Latrilla, handcuffed together as if to imply we're going back to Teebs. I don't know why they would assume that, considering that even the show acknowledges it was not a great idea to begin with. But nope, they tear away. They're back as individuals. Liana, what did you think about the dramaticist of bringing these two in at the last minute?
I thought it was fun. I thought it was neat. I was really hoping they would come out in a box, but, you know, I guess we've seen the end of box reveals. I thought it was fun that the show sort of was able to throw its own shade at itself, you know, and have Monet and Monique, you know, talk about please no teams. Monet saying we all saw how season one turned out. I thought that was a lot of fun.
By the way, for those people who don't know, season one of All Stars was in teams because RuPaul had decided long before that season had even aired. This is by my read on it, by the way. This is not like factual, but I'm telling you guys, this is the truth. RuPaul had decided that she wanted to give Chad Michaels a check. Like, she was pissed that Chad Michaels and Sharon Needles both ended up on the same goddamn season. They both deserve to win. We all know that, but you can only pick one of them. So what does she do? She says, you know what? I'm going to have an All-Star season. Let's make it as fast as possible so we can get to the end. I can crown freaking Chad Michaels girl bye. And that's exactly what she did.
Yeah. Well, though, to be fair, I think both Latrice and Manila were considered like pretty popular front runners as well, but they sort of like,
by the fans, I don't know, by RuPaul. Yes.
Yeah, I remember there was fan voting as well, and I'm pretty sure they were high up there. So now I'm glad that they sort of had their second chance here, including a second chance at the library challenge. But before we get into the queen's reads of each other, we three awoke this morning to an absolutely lovely treat. So I got a message from @DibsOnTheGibbs. Who posted his own read of the three of us in honor of the reading challenge. So let me see if I can find this here. So give a listen. Thank you to @DibsOnTheGib for reading us for filth. For those of you that missed it, give a listen as to some reads of your lovely host of the RuCap.
Excuse me while I put on my reading glasses. Liana Boris, you remind me a lot of my friend. Her last name is Harms, so she has to endure all these jokes about her last name being a verb and that making her full name a complete sentence. Now, while I hate to go for the obvious joke, I just have to be frank, Liana, you bore us.
Bye!
But at least I know that won't be the only tired joke here, because Brent also hosts this podcast. Speak of the devil, I've been a fan of Brent's ever since I started listening to RHAP during Big Brother 17. So that's why I was kind of like interested and shocked when I found out about his involvement in the staircase trial, and I thought, that can't be true. Anyone who's seen what Brent looks like in his Periscope videos knows that Brent is clearly not well acquainted with staircases. Cardio. And that brings us to Mike Bloom. Now, Mike, I'll be honest, you remind me a lot of your boss, Mr. Rob Cesternino. You know, you're both very professional, you're funny, but the similarity is never more obvious than during the Drag Race podcast, because you two constantly take third place to a ditz and a psychopath. Now, all my reads come from love. You all are my favorite Drag Race podcasters, and it works because you three remind me so much of the judges panel. You know, RuPaul, just like Liana, is a tired old queen who relies on the talents of other people just to get by. Brent is just like Michelle. He rarely has anything nice to say, and his face looks like it has more plastic in it than a recycling bin. And Mike, you're just like Santino, because honestly, why are you here? It even works because you have your own personal Merle Ginsburg. Ally Lasher disappeared a long time ago and nobody really noticed or cared. The library's closed.
Thank you again to @DibsOnTheGibbs. Hopefully, can't wait for a RuCap challenge where we get to reenact whatever happened to Ally Lasher.
I mean, like, I listened to that this morning, but I haven't listened to it since then. and I listen to it now, and it's like it's even better now. And like, honey, that was really, really good. And like, there were like a couple of reads within a read a couple times, which I love, which is what I thought made success during this reading challenge for Latrice Royale. Like her read of Valentino, where she was like, "Take that thing off your face." Oh, that is your face. Both of them. Or the other one, or whatever she said. It was great. Liana, what did you think of our friend who read us?
Oh my God, so good. I love it. I love, like, it was great because we all got our little individual read, and then we got the comparison to the judges. I love the Ally Lasher shade, too. That was just so
That was so great. That was such perfect. A great analogy. Yes. I love, by the way, I've never actually made the connection that your last name, like, it's Liana Boris. I've never, like, I've never thought of it as B-O-R-E space U-S.
But yeah, now you're thinking poor ass, aren't you?
Exactly, because I'm a freaking pervert. So, like, when I heard that, now I can't unsee it. Every time I see Liana's name now, I'm like, oh, it's she Boris. Oh, my God. It's so perfect.
Oh, my God. That's okay. I just rely on your talent to get me through.
Yes, I know, right? Oh, my God. That was so funny. Oh, Ditz and a psychopath. By the way, really quickly, like, it took me a second. It's like, okay, who's the Ditz and who's the psychopath?
Yeah, I know. Which is which?
Right?
It's like a Rorschach test. It really, like, depends on your interpretation. But I guess as I try to lower my voice two octaves to mimic Santino Rice, my true representative of the panel.
Why are you here, Mike?
I don't know. I got my big ass hat, and that's all I need. Look like a Rent-A-Center couch, Brent. Let's get into some of these reads here. So, Liana, give me some people that you thought did well and maybe some who didn't across the board. And also, let's just say, for those of you who haven't checked it out yet, as Rue put out there on the show proper, there are extra reads available online as well. Each queen got about like two or three extra reads in, and they're pretty damn fantastic. In fact, I would argue some of the online ones are a lot better than the ones that they showed on the show, but that's, you know, that's your own business. But who did you think did well here?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I actually, in terms of like the best read on the show, I really liked Monet's about you'll probably be buried in a recycling bin for Trinity, just because it, you know, of course, got a lot of plastic, blah, blah, blah. But like, I don't know. I thought that that was really funny because it felt like a little bit of a step above. And then in terms of the worst, oh, Farrah, just trying her best. It was cute, but like in a sad puppy dog kind of way, which is, I guess, her thing. But I just wanted to be like, oh, honey, no, that's okay. You can just sit down.
Well, Mike, as you said, first of all, I thought Latrice killed it. She was great. There were two fantastic reads that are on the extended version. You can find it actually on YouTube as well as on VH1. There is a point in time where Valentina is doing her reads, and she says, Rue, and she points at Latrice Royale, and she says, Mystique was a mistake. And the look on Latrice Royale's face, bitch. Oh, Lord. She was like, hold my purse. Like, those are fighting words. And then, if that wasn't it, Manila really surprised me. Manila is so smart. I forgot how funny she is. She says to Trinity Taylor, Trinity Taylor, what you've pumped your face full of is exactly like your spot on All Stars. Filler. And like, it was so, it was like mic drop, girl bye, and the look on Trinity's face was like, I could see Trinity going like, I call shade.
Oh my God. I love Latrice, and I feel like one of the great things about Latrice winning the first time is that like she's this, again, she's Miss Congeniality. She's a great representative of it, but she went in pretty hard in season four, and I think she did a great job here as well. I liked her talking about calling Monet SpongeBob square shape, that Trinity's Instagram looks like face tuning a chicken. But I got to say, I was most impressed by Valentina overall. I think her crack towards Monique of you brag so much about making your own clothes, but your dresses are so ugly, they hang themselves.
Yes.
That's a damn good joke. And again, Latrice is going to say later on, like, Valentina proved why she's an all-star. She wrote some surprisingly smart lines. And of course, again, some more self-referential stuff. I loved her going to Manila and calling her a booger. That's like, again, a nice, fun, full circle.
Right. Who's
moment.
The booger now? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Manila's response also to Valentina's read of Latrice, the mystique was a mistake. Manila's just like cracking up. And it's
She's
just,
dying.
You know, to think of
yeah.
like Latrice's reaction and then all the queens laughing so hard. Yeah. I was actually kind of shocked that Valentina didn't win.
Yeah, I was too, actually. Like, I think maybe they called it for, like, well, I don't know why they called it, but I'm sure Rue called the winner at the time, but Valentina really surprised the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm. A couple other ones that I liked. I liked Naomi Smalls, and this was an extra one, saying, you know, Trinity, you got beat by a peppermint. Why does your breath still smell like shit?
That was really funny. I liked that. Yes.
But I think one of my favorites was Trinity saying that Latrice is Monique's bigger sister, enlarged heart. So like there were some good reads across the board. I will say Farrah did not do super well. She also didn't do super well the first time. I'm pretty sure she was one of the main people who went in on Alexis last time, just because of sort of like the easy target. And I will say, I mean, Gia is cutting. I will say I don't know if it was cutting funny cutting, but like she read, there might just not have been a lot of humor involved with said reading, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty harsh, Liana, but I was here for it because I feel like that's Gia, and I feel like they know that that's Gia.
Yeah, she's literate for sure, can read the house down, but I was trying to also sort of separate the shade sound from the actual reads, and I thought that Gia's were fun, but I know that she sort of got the shade sound for her bad read, so I don't know if maybe it just didn't translate in the room and people really didn't like it, but I don't know. I thought they were kind of amusing.
So we move on from the reading challenge and we get into the maxi challenge. We mentioned this before, the All-Star Spangled Variety Show for the LGBTQ veterans and active service people. Sorry, Farrah, you will not find your straight husband there.
That was so great. Oh, my God. The thing is, I did the same thing where I'm like, when she said that, I'm like, oh, maybe she could. And then I'm like, and then Trinity's like, it's LGBTQ. And she's like, oh, yeah.
Not the only slip of the tongue that Farrah will make this episode, or emphasis on slip there.
Yes.
One of the reasons why I love this cast is as we sort of get into everyone undressing and getting into what they're going to do for their routine, there's so much fun stuff here. There's Naomi telling Manila Luzon that you're my lady bunny in terms of someone that I need to, you know, someone I feel like I'm in the presence of royalty, but Manila takes that as like a crack on her age. There's a really fun foreshadowing moment here where Monet says, I think she's putting like rubbers on her shoes. She's like, listen, if you slip, if you slip and fall, that's the kiss of death, which nearly ended up being it. So there's a lot of just fun stuff going on. We have like a fun 2 second moment where Valentina is doing her Valentina thing and trying to strip. And then Latrice just steps right in front of her and does the same thing. Like, this is why I love this cast so much. It's like, they're there to play, but they're like playing around with each other as well. So it just makes for a really lighthearted, fun tone.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's what we said in the preview podcast was I was just excited to see all of these queens interact with one another, and definitely being able to sort of have the workroom time definitely paid off. Especially I loved the Latrice Valentina moment. Especially because then Valentina's like, you're ruining my like fashion or something like that. It was really cute.
Oh, boy. Well, we get into a couple of preparative things here, and we'll get more into it as we get into the acts themselves. But we get some shade thrown here at Jasmine, who's talking with Latrice and Monique, I believe. And she says, you know, I'm going to do stand up. She's been doing some stuff at the Laugh Factory. And she gets asked if she's going to prepare something. And she says, nope, I'm just sort of going to go into it. I don't want to, you know, sound too scripted, too phony. If I go more off filter, then I'll be able to sound more smoother, you know, sound more in my own voice. Monique is not entirely sure, and it doesn't necessarily end up paying off for her. Brent, when you first saw this moment happen, did you think it was already going to be curtains for her?
I thought it was already going to be curtains for her. I was like, there's no way. Like Mike, you're a stand-up comedian. You've done this sort of thing before. You've done improv before. You know as well as I, there is a big difference than being with your friends or being with some people and being funny. And people say, oh, girl, you're so funny. I mean, I get that all the time. Not all the time, but I get that some of the time on RHAP when I'm doing the Big Brother podcast. And they're like, Brent, you're so funny. I love listening to you on Big Brother. You're so great. You just crack me up every time. Like, even your voice just cracks me up. There is a big difference between that and stand-up comedy. I mean, honey, come on, Mike. You like the, like, I knew this was like a car crash from the beginning.
I mean, I'm going to sound super on brand here and talk about The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is an Amazon Prime show about a young Jewish comedian in the 50s. And she builds a, I'll talk a bit about the show. She sort of builds a career for herself, just sort of getting drunk one evening and just unloading on a crowd about how miserable her life is. And she gets a lot of laughs. And she says, oh, that's going to be my act. I'm just going to go in completely off the cuff, talk off the top of my head, and make people laugh. And in about the fourth episode, she does that and completely bombs. And Ross, I'm so glad Ross was on the panel this episode because he makes such a great salient point about it where he's like, look, you know you're funny. I know I'm funny. But there's a big difference between making mimetic one-minute videos on social media and preparing an entire three-minute stand-up routine that's supposed to have a beginning, middle, and end to it. It's entirely different. Lightning can strike once, but you can't really keep lightning in that bottle and transport it somewhere else. So
here's the other thing. This like, and you're actually giving her too much credit because as far as I know, this was a one-minute stand-up routine. Like they only had to prepare a one-minute routine. If you go back and look, everybody's about 1 minute long. So she only had to make us laugh a little bit in order to get the job done. She had to come out and she had to start swinging. But she had nothing prepared. And like, I mean, they tried to give her, Monique tried to tell her, like, honey, maybe a little skeleton. But I'm not even sure that would have helped. I want to clarify something, though, really quick. I said that I expected the worst and it was a car crash waiting to happen. I hoped for the best. I thought, you know what, maybe I'll be surprised. But everybody, like, here's the thing, and I know that we're going to talk about some of the judging, and I agree that maybe some of the judging wasn't exactly perfect. However, I think that everybody has a past on RuPaul's Drag Race, and you come into the show with RuPaul, and she has expectations. She has expectations of who you are. And somebody like Jasmine or Farrah, I think they really had to go beyond what their expectations were. Like, they needed to blow the doors off in order to really get above water. And they just weren't able to do that. And I think this was a situation where Jasmine really, if she cared, she probably could have been funny. But on the other hand, I don't think that Jasmine's brand of funny, and I've gotten differing tales on this. I listened to another recapper say something about, you know, don't let this dissuade you from going to a Jasmine Master show. And I'm like, I guess, but I don't think she's like, she's never been funny to me outside of her videos. Like, she's never been funny on the show. I guess she's just one of these queens that just doesn't fit onto RuPaul's Drag Race because it was just a miss from the beginning.
I think what was interesting to me, because I was trying to understand, I was like, why would you not think of something? You know what I mean? Like, the fact that when she was in the workroom talking to the other queens saying, yeah, no, I'm just going to get out there and improvise. And even, yeah, the suggestion of, I can't remember who it was, Monet or whoever, who said, yeah, what about an outline, a skeleton? No. I didn't even want to do that. I just don't understand how you can walk out in front of a crowd of people and just say like, oh, no, I'll figure it out when I get out there. Like, are you going to be inspired by something? Are you hoping that something's going to happen to you on your way down the runway that will then inspire your, you know, comedic routine? I don't know. I guess I just didn't really understand it as a creative decision, why you wouldn't prepare anything at all.
I think, again, it's just sort of like the way that Jasmine has been doing it. And, you know, whether it's like it's sort of like she's been driving a car, a certain car for 15 years. And even though the car might not necessarily have all the right parts in it, it still works. And she feels like, okay, this works for me. I might as well just sort of, you know, keep doing it. It's something that I'm used to. And compared to like maybe everyone else freaking out around her, she's extremely calm in the face of all this. Even after the fact, she's confident in her performance. So yeah, I would agree that I think on paper, no preparation is absolutely insane, but I think in Jasmine's mindset, it's just, you know, it's par for the course. I was able to make him laugh at the Laugh Factory by just breezing in and talking about this date that I went on. Why not do the same thing here? I'm assuming it's the same type of audience and it'll have the same type of reaction. Turned out not to be the case.
Well, if it is an old car that's been working, the brakes finally failed because this was a car crash.
Not again. What is it with Jasmine and car crashes? Let's get into the talent show itself and we'll go act by act. But first, can we please talk about Jennifer Mother Effin' Lewis on the judging
Woo!
Panel? We finally got her. I don't know if it was because of Shangela's involvement in All Stars 3, including being
I think it was
Jennifer
because of
Lewis.
Shangela's involvement in All Stars 3. Let's be real.
including being Jennifer Lewis on the panel during Snatch Game as well. But, oh, man, she's everything I wanted and more from a Jennifer Lewis. Just zaniness out the window in the best way, Liana.
Oh my God, her reactions. I think it was to Naomi. She was like, work, girl. Like, you better work, bitch. And just like her yelling and just being so into it. I mean, that's what I want to see in a judge. Somebody who is just so excited to be there and like is involved in what's going on and gave not only, you know, valid critiques, but they were so on point. And she was just having fun. I was having fun watching her having fun. And she can come back anytime as far as I'm concerned.
She was great. She was warm. She was funny. She was a fan of the show first and foremost and a judge second. Everything about her, I thought, spoke class to me. And I love, there's a moment in time where she's talking to Farrah. She's like, leave that nervous shit at home. That's boring. Nobody wants that. Like, somebody needed to just knock Farrah upside the head. And I was glad to see it was Jennifer Lewis who did it. By the way, I'm also looking forward to Gus Kentworthy coming as a guest judge later on this season. Or maybe it's like season 11. But he's coming. I know that. He's coming.
Yeah. I think my favorite thing was like almost every act, it would cut to Jennifer Lewis, who for some reason had her sunglasses on, but she was like adjusting them like they were opera glasses, which
yes!
It doesn't make any sense, but that's Jennifer Lewis for you. Like, it doesn't make any sense on paper, but she's able to pull it off with just her energy and her eagerness.
Yes, so I love it. She's like, I am the mother of Black Hollywood, darling.
So good. And she was like, I'm sure she was ready to grab that trombone, that rusty trombone, and just get into it. Whereas some other judges might not have been into that. So like she was all good with it. Well, let's start the parade here. Let's start with the one who opens this and also ends up in the top two with her original song, Brown Cow Stunning. And I think she along with Monet, was this completely lip synced or was this also live singing into lip syncing? I'm not entirely sure, but she does, you know, a big debut of her song going into a routine where she works the stage. Liana, what'd you think of this? And would you have put this in your top two or top three?
Okay, well, I definitely had the same thought. I was like, is this lip syncing or singing or both? Okay, maybe there's some singing. I wasn't sure. Either way, I mean, it was a lot of fun. It seemed to be a hit with the crowd. It must have been super entertaining to watch. I mean, she is a crazy fun performer. And I think because also a little bit of, it was the first one that was her own song, because I will say the own song thing kind of got boring to me after a while. Although I will say there were some other looks or other performances that stood out to me. I thought she definitely deserved to be safe in the top two. That's where I disagree.
Oh, really? To me, she was clearing away the winner of the show. I thought she was number one in terms of the people that really impressed me the most. I loved her from top to bottom. It's her own song. I agree with you. I actually thought she was singing, but in hindsight, Michelle said something to Monet about, okay, so you decided to include live vocals in that. And then, of course, Monet is like, you know, maybe not a great idea. So the fact that they didn't say that to Monique makes me think that maybe it was lip synced, but on the other hand, it is her voice, so I'll give her credit from that. It was perfectly lip synced, perfectly done. Everything about it I thought was very entertaining. Again, she's the first contestant out there and has to basically create the energy. It's like figure skating. When you're the first skater, you've got to go out there and create the energy yourself. You can't depend on other people to give it to you and soak it up yourself. So I thought she was really, really wonderful, and everything about this was self-referential, yes. But it was well done. It was executed. There was a concept from beginning to end, and it worked for me.
Now that I'm thinking about this, do we think that Latrice, as the winner of the mini challenge, got to determine the order of the variety show, or do we think it was just sort of randomized?
I wouldn't. Liana?
I mean, I would just assume random, or it was planned beforehand. I mean, maybe. I mean, unless there was some drama coming from it. I was trying to think, you know, why wouldn't they show Latrice picking the order? Because usually they always do whenever the queens have the opportunity to do that. But maybe it was just, you know, boring. But then wasn't Latrice going in the middle?
No, she went second to last.
Oh, second to the end. Okay, maybe she did do that. No, probably not. I bet it was decided beforehand.
I don't think that she did. I will say that the producers probably selected it. They knew that Monique was going to be great. They saw her perform. They knew the song. They knew what was coming. They're not going to put somebody like Gia Gunn, who's a little more quiet as the opening act. They wanted somebody to come out there and give them some energy. So I think by virtue of being who she was, I think she was probably amongst two or three queens that came out and that could come out and create the energy on their own as being the first act.
The only reason I bring it up is because apparently Alaska, who won the reading challenge, chose the order in All Stars 2.
Okay,
but
well.
But it wasn't shown on screen. We found out after the fact where, and that was, you know, Alaska just did it the fair way and said, I'll do everyone in alphabetical order except putting myself last. So who knows? Maybe some social media sleuths can find that out. But it was just something curious to me. I thought Monique, in terms of all the acts that did some sort of performing a song, did the best one. I think that if you're talking about someone who wants to come to All Stars and prove, you know, that there is more to me than the limited time I had on Drag Race, this is sort of what we see. Because, you know, she says, I was eliminated right before the singing challenge, and she got to, you know, she got to show off her pipe. She's got good pipes. She got only lip-synced once, and it was when she didn't know the words. So she wants to say, hey, I want to prove that I can actually turn it out and know my words and not screw up a lip-sync performance. And she was able to do that as well. Maybe it's because of that energy and the fact that she went first, that she was in the top two. I would probably put her in, I would definitely say my top four, maybe top three. It's only docked points just because, it, you know, I think there were a couple more acts that I haven't seen before that I might pref just from the pure variety of the variety show. But I thought it was extremely well done overall.
Okay.
All right, let's move on here to another song from Miss Naomi Smalls with a bit of a bald button at the end of it. One that actually pushes Naomi in the top three amongst the judges. Brent, what do you think about
Naomi? Are we sure about that? Are we sure about that? See, I am not convinced that this was top three. I guess we could ask somebody about that. Maybe we should have before this podcast. But to me, and I know this sounds like I'm reaching here, I thought this was clearly a top two and a bottom four for me because the judges were not united in their praise of this, and even the people that liked it had negative things to say about it. So I thought that, well, we can just talk about whether it was top or bottom from the judges' point of view. She got criticism, and I agreed with the criticism because overall, I thought this was a total miss for me. I mean, again, you come out and you say, I want to be something more than what I was. I want to be more than just the model, the poser, the person strutting the runway. And what do? You come out and give us a, quote, talent that is basically you just walking around, showing off your legs, and then you pull off the thing at the end looking like Albert Einstein. It was a total miss for me. I mean, good look. She's got great legs, but I don't need to see them again. I want, like, I'm thinking to myself, like, why can't you give us something that's unexpected? Why can't you do that? And I know you're thinking, well, okay, but you praise Monique and she didn't give us something that was necessarily unexpected, but she did though. I did not expect her to be able to sing. I did not expect her to be able to write her own song, for God's sake. This was so boring. Liana, are you with me or not?
Okay, so in terms of Naomi Smalls, there was a meme I saw, I think, on the Reddit for RuPaul's Drag Race that was like, your legs can't be, or your talent can't be legs. And that's sort of what I thought with Naomi, because it was this, you know, very Milk-esque, touch the fashion, change your life type song. The hair reveal was fun. I will give her that. The thing is that as someone who has now seen her perform live, albeit, you know, what, two total numbers, she is super mesmerizing to watch in person. And I sort of feel like maybe there's a little bit of that going on if she was indeed in the top three. Where just she's a captivating human being to watch move. And like, maybe that's what it was. But yeah, if this was top three, I didn't really get it.
I wish, like, I actually really liked that button. Cause I think, again, if you're talking about that one statement, Brent, of I want to prove I'm more than just a fashion model with legs for days, she did it in that one moment where she revealed that she had the bald head. I thought that was a fantastically timed moment. If she had bumped it up earlier, and then did things like, I don't know, like a tearaway to saggy boobs, you know, and just like it's slowly becoming undone that she's actually not this glamorous young model. She's actually like this old fuddy-duddy trying to strut her way around the runway. That could have been a fantastic routine. It would be similar to like what Benda LaCreme pulled off masterfully last season with, you know, making a vaudeville burlesque routine actually comedic. So I think she had the right idea with that one moment. I just wish she had built it around that one moment instead of, you know, adding in all these other things. And she still had fun moments. I particularly liked her scooching across the stage and probably giving herself like the worst plastic burns across her ass from doing so. But that one moment just made me sort of salivate over the idea of possibly basing an entire routine around that.
And while I'm at it, Liana, does it look like she's also wearing the same shoes for the entrance look in the variety show?
Let me see. Yeah, they do.
They do look the same.
Jesus Christ, people. Oh, my God.
Some legs. Yeah, she did look gorgeous, though. I liked it. But yeah, I get your point, Mike, about, you know, she was on the right track. It just needed a little bit more to it to really, like, bring home this, you know, branching into comedy type routine. So hopefully we'll see more of that from her. I mean, I didn't think it was that bad. I had fun. Did it deserve to be top three if it was? Probably not, but .
Well, let's move on here to a routine that I don't know what the judges thought of it, but I personally was, if we're talking about mesmerizing, I was just head over heels with this one. Brent, what did you think about Gia's kabuki routine?
I loved it. I probably would have placed it in the top two next to Monique. However, here's 2 points. Number one, it goes back to my previous criticism of what I said about RuPaul's Drag Race. Everybody has a past. I think that Gia Gunn was not expected to be on this season by many people. I think that the expectations for her were a little bit low, and she really needed to wow us. I will say that she did wow me. However, the one criticism of her performance and her act would be that it was a little quiet for a drag talent show. And I know that there was a big bang at the end, but I did find myself a little uncomfortable watching it. Like, okay, where is this going? Like, is there more to this? And eventually I did get there. Same thing with actually Manila. I thought that that was another instance of somebody who was maybe a little bit quiet and a little bit too demure for drag. And, I understood why the judges wanted to see a little bit more. They needed to be wowed more by it. And maybe she did wow us, but I understood where they were coming from. So I'm being a little fancy fencerton about it. Like, I personally would have had it in my top two. However, I understood where the judges were coming from.
I loved okay. This. I 100% would have put it in my top two. It was, and maybe this is again, you know, I wanted something different and this was different. It was a clear talent. If this is supposed to be a talent show, I loved the pedals and the streamer reveals. I thought it was just gorgeous. It was fun to watch. It was mesmerizing. I really loved it. And I really, truly can't believe that it wasn't in the top two. But I think that part of that gets to Brent, your point of, well, it wasn't, you know, wow, drag show, talent show. And I kind of feel like a lot of the judging was skewed towards that with, you know, picking Monique Hart, for example, which was fun. And, you know, if I'd been in the room, maybe I would have felt differently. But it was cool to see Gia do something that was, you know, different from so many other girls and something that was really her talent. And I loved it.
Yeah, and I guess I sort of liked the break from, like, the big and loud. And I could understand that maybe this did not, you know, necessarily keep everyone's heart rates up, but that's also a cultural thing, right? I mean, kabuki is sort of like this dance drama that is very smooth, very languid, but with these punctuations, you know, when she puts out the fan and she starts spinning it on her finger, I was like as agape as Jasmine Masters was in terms of just the dexterity required to do that.
Right.
And I guess I was also really into it just because it's so different from the Gia we get outside of that kabuki routine. Like, even when we see sort of a nice disparate thing to have Gia still in her kimono and her, you know, her garb saying these kind of bitchy things sitting on the sidelines about the other queens, it's weird to see, but I just thought it was so beautiful and well done. I could understand, again, depending on what the judges sort of value in terms of aesthetic, why it wouldn't be in the top, but it would be personally in my top just because I thought it was so different from all the other, basically all the other drag acts I've really experienced in my lifetime so far. And it connects back to another type of performative art form that we're not used to being connected to drag. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And I think we're all in agreement that we loved it. I think you guys absolutely loved it. I think I loved it, but I got where they were coming from. Like, I kind of expected that she wouldn't be in the top two, even if she probably deserved it. But in fairness, I was probably more aghast that Monique during season 10, during the first episode, was not in the top when she had Queen of Hearts outfit.
Robbed.
Yeah, like that was, to me, that was more of a robbed instance. Whereas I was like, Gia, like, she's got to pay her dues a little bit. Like, if she comes out and wows us again on episode 2, then they're going to put her in the top.
Well, let's move on to someone who I'm assuming Brent maybe has even more favorable reviews towards. And this one ends up in the top 2. So yeah, well, so when Trinity was talking about doing this tucking demonstration, I thought it was going to be like the DragCon challenge from season 10, where like she was just going to do a live demo. But no, she apparently wrote an entire song about it and lip synced to it. That was sort of a demo slash comedic routine. The judges were in stitches over it. The crowd alike. Liana, what do you think about Trinity here?
Okay, so I have mixed opinions about this because I think Trinity, like this routine, and then also when I saw her perform previously, it was, I can appreciate what she did. I, you know, on paper, like the lyrics are good. It's a great idea. Her outfit looks gorgeous. I love that she did the 50s thing. Like, that's so funny. The prop with the, you know, oh, she's going behind a tuck, and then the later reveal, which I think it was Jennifer Lewis who liked and someone else, maybe Ross didn't, but I liked it. Again, all on paper, but I feel like this was an act to me that was more of a chuckle instead of a, like, wow, or a laugh out loud thing for me. That was my personal opinion about it. Like, I can appreciate the you know, the effort and the artistry and the writing of the humor behind it, but then to me, as an actual performance, I was like, oh yeah, like, that's funny.
Yeah, I think this is another one of those instances where expectations can screw with you a little bit, because I think we all expected Trinity the Tuck to be on an all-star season. Like, it was not a surprise to me that she came on this season, and I expected that she's going to do great. And not only that, she comes out, great entrance look, great. Goes to the variety show, has a fully realized concept from start to finish. She put effort into it. She had thought into it. She had an outfit with the glasses and the skirt, which was a tearaway with a reveal at the end, and the shoes and the lyrics with the little asides at the end of every verse. I thought everything about it was really, really cool. It wasn't laugh out loud funny to me. It was, in my opinion, a safe routine, or maybe top three if they had had a top three. Again, I don't think they had a top three, whatever. I think that she would have been in top three, top four for me. It would have been close, but I think that it was, you're sort of fooled into the Trinity tuck of it all. Like here's the thing. She had the two spray cans on the table, and she had the sign in front of her that said Trinity the Tuck. Everything was clearly labeled. Mm-hmm. The font was nice and big so you could see it. I actually thought that was one of the things that maybe held back Gia Gunn a little bit, is that her fan dance maybe seemed a little small in comparison to everybody else. But Trinity, on the other hand, had a sense of wow about it and was right in time with the music with the reveal. So I thought that maybe there's a little bait and switch, to take my phrase from last week in the Christmas special, where, like, you thought it was going to be good, and you got to the end, and you're like, was it good? But you expected it to be good, so you kind of were like, I guess it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I had a smile on my face this entire time between, okay, like, the hairspray style setup of everything. I thought it was so interesting that, like, I think Trinity admits she's not a singer, but she still sort of produced her own spoken word single. And I think the funniest lyric by far is her saying, you know, I can't sing, but you get the point. I think that the lyrics were clever, and there was enough bouncing energy to sort of keep it going, and she was moving around and she put a lot of character into it. But I think, to your point about expectations, Brent, I feel like the judges might not have thought she would be doing something like this. They probably thought she would still be doing something pageanty. Maybe they sort of have forgotten about the Stanky the Starfish, Sister Mary Koontz of it all, but it seemed like they were genuinely elated to see her go down the comedic route, which would then make sense as to why they put her in the top. They felt like, wow, she really exceeded our expectations as to how she would do. I thought it was a really interesting way to deliver on the, you know, the recurring talent of let me perform a song. She brought some of a physical aspect to it that wasn't her jumping and kicking around the stage, and that can be a lot of fun, but when you see it a lot of times in a row, it sort of blurs together in your brain. This one will stick out to you for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I think the more I like it now. And I don't know if this is just I'm thinking about all of the details and all the work that she clearly put into it. And the fact that, yeah, it was different. It was unique. It was still on brand, though, with the whole tucking thing. It's almost like, okay, this is the way that I would want to see it done, where there's so much more to it. I guess maybe to Brent's point about, oh, taking it to the next level, that's what this was. You know, was, yeah, okay, it's still tucking, but she had all of this other stuff that was going on that really, yes, made it feel like something else. And I think, yeah, I'm not mad that it was in the top two.
All right, well, let's move on here to someone who did not fare so well. Oh, poor Miss Pheromone. She went for some burlesque because, again, that helped, you know, helped Roxy Andrews. It helped Benda LaCreme last time. And this is a routine she apparently had been dreaming about. But those dreams took a tumble when she did. And it ended up, you know, shaking her for the worst, put her down in the bottom. I want to parse this conversation under a question that we got from Justine Cassada on Twitter, actually, while we were recording this. Brent, do you think if Farrah didn't fall, that she would have been bottom three, not two, and that someone like Monet would have been in the bottom two instead?
Oh, boy. I'm so conflicted about this one. I mean, I was actually live tweeting to you guys when I was watching the episode, and I was like, you know what? Farrah didn't deserve to be in the bottom two. I really didn't think that. I mean, yes, she fell, but that can happen to anybody. I mean, like, she had a great concept from start to finish that she was going to do a burlesque number. She was going to come out. She had props. She had Gia Gunn on the side, who's not want to give compliments, actually saying, I'm actually impressed. Farrah has something that looks expensive. It looks very cool. And she came out, she had a number she was going to do. And yes, the fall was not great. And it was one of those things where she fell and you could see that it really shook her. I guess that was probably the bigger problem. Mm-hmm. But overall, I thought she did a good job. And for her being on brand, not only that, the outfit was great. I love the oversaturation of the colors on it. It was unexpected for me. I expected very like pastels and pinks with Farrah. I did not expect this color saturation assault of my eyeballs, which is what I got from her. But I loved it. I thought it was really, really wonderful. And to me, I probably would have had her bottom. Like, you know what? Here's the thing. I'm going to give you the real take. I would have had her safe. I thought she was actually pretty good. I just didn't care for Naomi's routine. I would have had her in the bottom three with Monet in the bottom two. That's how I really saw things.
I think it was the fact that the fall shook her, because you can tell she looked, I mean, visibly shaken after it and just can't really recover. And I think that that's sort of the biggest thing. Like, it wasn't the fall itself. If she had done that and just like Akasha gotten spun up and gotten right back up, I think it would have been okay. And I think also, and I don't know if this is me, I don't know if the judges were thinking this, but, you know, Roxy doing her, you know, winning burlesque routine from All Stars 2, that was the first thing that popped into my head. So I couldn't help but sort of compare it to that. But I will say, I liked Farrah's take on it. Absolutely loved the colors. Loved the outfit. I loved her compact, the highlighter compact that she came out of. I thought that prop was so cute. It was so Farrah. And again, maybe this is an expectations thing. Maybe my expectations were low for her. I don't know. I thought it was cute, but it was really hard to see her being so upset after she fell. That was the hardest part for me.
That's the thing, though. My expectations were really low. And like, I was like, oh, my God, she has like an entire set and it's really cute and it does look expensive. And she has a number ready to perform and she knows the words from start to finish or the moves that she's going to do. Everything about it was really, really fun for me. And the outfit was gorgeous. It was unexpected. And again, I would have had her safe, even with the fall.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd have her safe, because I still feel like the routine itself was fine. I am not really into the burlesque unless you have something like Benda LaCreme, like add some comedy into it or add some real pop into it. I feel like Farrah was, you know, doing her best. I heard the faces she was making seemed a little like plastered on. Maybe it was just there was a million things running through her head and she wasn't necessarily getting into it completely. But I mean, I give her all the credit for at least getting up after the fall. Granted, she looked extremely shaken, but at least she only had like 10 seconds left of the routine. If she did that in the very beginning, God only knows what would have happened. So I probably would have put her, in the bottom two, because I'll admit, even before the fall, there was nothing there that was really speaking to me, as opposed to even some of the other acts, like maybe your Naomi's or your Monet's that I wasn't a huge fan of compared to some of the others. They at least had moments that popped for me, where hers, the set decoration was really pretty. There's a lot of really interesting colors going on, but the actual performance on stage, I unfortunately was not there for that.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I mean, she probably was still bottom two, I think, ultimately for me, but I don't think it was, you know, maybe as bad. I just think Jasmine Masters was just so by far and away the worst that, you know, like everybody else in comparison looks fine.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was too. And Mike, I take your point that there were some wow moments or a wow moment with Naomi Smalls and Monet Exchange, and there wasn't really with Farrah. So I could probably be persuaded that she's bottom three. I don't know, but I don't think I could go bottom two.
Well, let's move on to our back half here. Moving on to someone else who ended up in the bottom, Miss Monet Exchange. Wanted to show off her singing voice. We heard about how she was an opera singer. Not the greatest start for being, you know, someone who prides themselves on her round body. She was a little flat in the very beginning. Then it looks like she broke into the lip sync, which again is a little confusing. But was it Soak It Up is the name of the song. Liana, what did you think about Monet here?
I think at this point, this is when I was like, another sponge, because I was already mad about the cows. So I feel like I don't know how that sort of influenced my viewing of her performance. And, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, doing the, you know, fake split thing. Ugh. But then she had a real split, so I was kind of okay with that. I guess I, when I think about this, I, or her act, I just think about that.
You didn't.
What? Hi. I think about the judging. Just, I guess maybe, Brent, maybe you can explain this to me of, you know, like, why was this so much worse, you know, that did deserve to be in the bottom three?
Because this felt like Monet's, this felt like her entire season. This felt like her greatest hits all over again. It was the same damn sponges. You know what? They're not even sponges. They're Brillo pads. They're the things that you use to get the crud off your dishes when water and soap won't do it. That's what she's putting on with that. And it's the same horrible green and yellow of it all that I've seen 1,000 times from her. And they were falling off during her performance, by the way. And then she has the fake drop down or the fake split. And she does, like, everything was like, we've seen this before, girl. And not only that, the vocals at the beginning were such a bad decision. And I was already in a bad mood from her entrance look. The only thing good about this, I'll say, was the lipstick, which she has done before in her promo looks, by the way. And her hair was not a kitty girl wig. It still didn't have any length to it, but at least it had some volume, and I was here for that. Having said that, overall, this was, to me, it was just, I was so angry about the fact that it was sponges again from her that I was like, because that's all she talked about during her season was sponges. Whereas you look at somebody like Monique, and Brown Cow Stunning only happened one episode for her. It's happened on social media since then, but it only happened on one episode for her. So when she came out and she did the Brown Cow Stunning thing, I was like, I get you, girl. I'm here for it. But Monet, again, after we watched her entire season, where every damn episode had a reference to a goddamn sponge, she comes out with a song called Soak It Up and the same ugly Brillo pads stuck all over her for her performance number with her greatest hits of her season. I was with the judges on this one, and I would have stuck her in the bottom two just for kicks.
She has, like, a beautiful basso profundo singing voice. Like, you felt that when she dropped into her lower register. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe she felt like she can usually pull off those, like, really high falsetto notes, but they just weren't there that day. And I kind of wish that she had, you know, modulated. I understand it was probably a bad vocal day. They were probably working, you know, all through the night and all through the day to pull this off. So maybe she should have, you know, opted out on some notes, but it did not start off things on the right foot. And yeah, I guess from there, it didn't really pick up for me. I think she was able to own the stage. I mean, there's a reason why she was the lip sync assassin of season 10. It's because she's a damn good performer. But again, if we're going back to this chestnut of expectations, we already have those expectations of Monet. And so we didn't really get those exceeded. Anyway, yes. I'm assuming the judges did too. So I still, you know, I'm going to enjoy Monet performing no matter what. It just didn't necessarily wow me compared to some of the other stuff that others were doing that surprised me more.
It was just, okay, I'm just thinking about how many of these were lip syncing to your own song. Monique, Naomi, Trinity, although hers, I will say, was a little different. Monet and Valentina all did that. That's like half the queens did the same quote unquote talent. That's boring. I'm bored.
To me, it was the sponge and the fact that she did the fake drop down again. I was just like, I've seen this before. I watched your season. I don't need to see a rehash of it.
Well, I think that, like, yes, you could say that, oh, Because, I mean, this happens every season, right? You have at least three queens that are like, okay, I'm going to do one of my, you know, original songs, which you say, like, no, show me something different. But, like, this is what they do for a living. They go out there and they perform these songs. So I feel like if you're saying, here, show off a talent, not everyone is able to, you know, oh, I juggle knives in my spare time. It's going to be much rarer that you get.
All she had to do was come out in a non-sponge look, come out in something that was fierce and fun that she performs every night at the club. I'm sure she's got an outfit that would have worked for this. Come out, lip sync the house down, give us some great dance moves. Don't put in the fake drop split again. And just like, just slay, bitch. Just slay. And it would have been great. But instead, it felt tired to me.
Ugh. Tired ass showgirl to you?
Tired ass showgirl, yep.
All right, well, let's move on here to a bit of a more unconventional act. Manila's, which took a bit of ramping up, I'll admit. She has a canvas, and she's just painting on it to, I think it's In the Hall of the Mountain King, one of those, like, public domain songs. But it ends up sort of like in the same way as Naomi's. Like, it ends up actually producing a very strong finish where it turns out that she was actually painting these flowers in a vase, which I didn't even notice until the last, like, 5 seconds of the routine. She finds out it's upside down, turns it the right side up, disappears behind the canvas, and then does a reveal from her paint smock into an outfit that has all the colors of the painting. So I feel like almost the end justified the means there, personally. Liana, what did you think about it?
Yes, I loved this. It was different. I will admit, yes, it was a little bit of a slow build, especially when you're getting to see what, you know, like a minute of content. You almost want it to be as jam-packed as possible, and you maybe don't necessarily have time for that build to a reveal. But I thought that this worked so well. Like, I thought that the juice was worth the squeeze because I had no idea what was happening. And then when she turned it upside down, mind blown. I don't know. Maybe that's just my simple mind that was blown. But I really enjoyed it. And I will say that in the Hall of the Mountain King, there was a commercial that was playing that same song, and it came on right after, and I was super confused, and that messed with me a little bit. But I loved her painting thing. I really liked it. I thought it was I would have put her in the top three.
Again, I love this as well. It did take a little time to ramp up, but I didn't see the flowers in the vase coming from a mile away. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't see it, and I kept looking for it, and I didn't see it. And then I saw it, and then she had the perfect sense of timing. Again, what am I looking for? A fully realized concept from start to finish. That's mm-hmm. exactly what this was. She came out, and then she got behind, did a quick switch, and had an outfit reveal right on the beat of the music at the end. With her matching her painting. Great. I mean, that takes such talent to be able to, like, have that sense of timing and not to be late or early on that. I really was here for this.
It was such a well done routine, like, pristine down to every detail. That's what I will admire a lot of these queens as well, that these routines were like, and maybe it's because you assume that the challenge is going to be coming, but they felt practiced. They felt on the beat, especially with Trinity and Manila stuff that are so music dependent. Like, they had their stagemanship worked down, you know, to every single second. And I'll also give major props to Manila for doing a quick painting. You know, your strokes have to be, like, pretty damn precise to have to get through, what, like, a minute and a half song and have to paint an entirely, you know, good-looking painting that looks like the thing that's on the table to get applause with it by the end. If you don't pull it off, it completely falters even with the outfit reveal at the end. And for her to be able to produce a piece of artwork, especially upside down, it's ridiculous to me. I loved it.
Yeah, that's a talent. That's a talent.
Bring that shit to America's Got Talent. I want to see it in drag. Okay, let's move over to maybe the other side of the spectrum. We're just yo-yoing back and forth now with this back half. Jasmine Masters has something to say. It is interesting, Brent. You said before that, like, you felt like this was, like, everyone had a minute, because this is by far the quickest quote unquote comedy routine I think I've ever seen. It was basically, my name is Jasmine Masters. This guy's breath smells stanky. My name is Jasmine Masters. Bye. Like, that was the entire thing. I don't know if it was edited down.
And no, I can guarantee you, like, I know that they work really hard on the editing of the show. Like, I know for certain that if there was anything redeeming about Jasmine Masters, they would have put it out there. Like, if there was a joke there, they would have put it on the freaking show. Like, they're not intentionally trying to, like, they're not trying to bore us as an audience. I'm certain that this is, like, this was probably unedited. This was probably, like, the entire routine from start to finish, and they had nothing to work with to save Jasmine Masters in the eyes of the public.
Yeah, I just don't see how you... Oh, I just don't see how you go out and do this way. I mean, you know, what I think it was Trinity who said, where are the jokes? And, you know, to your point, Brent, I think if there were jokes, we would have seen the jokes, which means there were no jokes.
There were no jokes. Yes. And not only that, like, I'm pretty sure, I'm honestly pretty sure that if I went to time this on my DVR and actually, you know, listen to it, it would have probably been about 35, 40 seconds. Like, I don't even think she used her full minute. Like, I think she literally came out there, said his breath stank, said it smelled like ass, said, stop licking ass. Like, your breath smells like that. My name is Jasmine Masters, girl, bye. Like, I think that was literally it. And it was like, wow, did we really bring this bitch back for that? Like, really? That's what we just did? Like, I'm sure Rue was just like beside herself.
Well, do we think that part of the consternation might be that even she admits it was a take on her now viral, you know, how do you not know your breath smells bad routine? Do you think if, albeit she's still Bond, but she took on a different topic, would that have helped her in any way?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, she was just not prepared. You can't tell her. She will not listen to you. You saw, like, she got no laughs from the audience whatsoever. And yet somehow she's still telling us, well, I know I didn't deserve to be in the bottom two. Like, I know I did good, you know? Like, what are you talking? You can't tell me that I wasn't funny. She actually said that. You can't tell me that I wasn't funny. And I'm literally, like, at home with my mouth open going, I can't even believe, like, this is, like, I'm sorry. This is the political universe we live in right now where you can call, like, you can say the sky is red and you look up and the sky is blue. And you're like, no, it's red. Like, even though you're looking at it, it's blue. The people still say it's red. This is Jasmine Masters saying, no, I was funny. And you're like, but you didn't get no laughs. And she's like, but I was still funny.
Oh, my God. Mike, you asked what would have helped her. Only Jesus could have helped
Jesus.
Her in that moment.
Glittering Jesus.
Amen.
Yeah, I mean, I really love Jasmine's videos overall. But yeah, I think this just was not a good place for it. And it's weird because you would think that with the timing as well, like, she doesn't need to make it a 5-minute routine. She just come and say her thing and leave. But it, again, from what we were seeing as it was edited, it didn't play well. And maybe it was just that Jasmine said, you know, I've been doing the Laugh Factory for a while. Sometimes you go out there and you deliver funny things and the crowd just isn't right. Maybe she somehow thought that. I don't know. It's tough for me to assign some logic sometimes to what Jasmine Masters does, because that's sort of what we love about her. But this was not good. Just plain and simple, this was not a good showcase
of
her
talent. Not good, Bob. Not good.
Not good at all. Let's bring it home with these last two here. I want to go to Liana for Latrice, because you mentioned this before. When you saw the Queens on the holiday tour, Latrice did a flag routine. How similar was it to what we saw on the show?
Okay. I think the one that, so she did the same thing where she had like the one flag that then turned into two flags. The one that I saw, one of the flags had a reveal, like it was blue and then it turned white, which was really cool. And we didn't get to see that on the edited show. So I don't know, you know, if there were some more differences. I just kind of assumed, I was like, oh, she's going to do the same thing. And if it was, I thought that would have been in the top, but there may have been some differences. Also, I did hear, I think it was Trinity who said something on Twitter about how Latrice maybe dropped a flag or two. And maybe that's why she wasn't in the top. Like, I think some people, maybe myself included, thought she should have been.
Really?
At least from what we saw. Yeah. But at least from what we saw in the edited show, she looked amazing.
Yeah, I was a little bored by this. I mean, this was the definition of safe for me. I know that some people loved it, but I've seen a version of this on YouTube before, where she does the flag routine at the shows. And I also thought that the look was not great. I mean, it makes her look freaking huge. And not only that, the hair looks very boy to me. The makeup looks like there's a beard there. Like, I was not here for the look overall. And I thought that there could have been a little bit more done here. But it was safe for me. And if she dropped a few flags, then at least I understand why.
I will give it points for it being unconventional again compared to, because I'm, and also, you know, again, it, if everyone else were disregarded the Star Spangled Variety aspect of it, this is the most patriotic, right, for her to do color guard.
Yeah, exactly. It was very, very patriotic. If only she had been wearing like a patriotic outfit, because I agree with you, Brent. The outfit was, they were like, the shoulder pads were different shapes. Like, I think one was a different shape from the other. And then she had the, what are those things called? The, like generals wear them on the, I feel like I'm playing Taboo on
pilots
their,
or
yes yeah. epaulets is that the word
epaulets yeah
okay sorry anyway yeah, yeah the, those are ugly too so yeah this outfit was not great
and I'm not being a sizist by saying she's freaking huge because she looks amazing in her entrance look and she's still a big girl but she's proportionized correctly like you don't want to go out there and have you know, parts of yourself looking bigger than what they are. And I feel like this outfit does her no favors in terms of what she's trying to get across.
I liked how she opened, though. I mean, I sometimes forget how good of a mover Latrice can be. And she's doing, like, all these balletic twirls across the stage before she gets to the flags. I feel like it was a very, like, movement-oriented start. You bring up an interesting point about the drop flags, because I believe I saw something. I don't know if you guys can confirm it. Did they each do their act twice? And then they edited together the best product, or do they only get one shot at it?
What I've heard through the grapevine on Reddit is that they were given two opportunities, but some of them didn't take the two opportunities. But they were given two opportunities to do their act and to make them look as good as possible. But from what we're hearing, that all the contestants were talking about the fact that Farrah fell in her routine. So even if they edited around or tried to edit around the fact that Farrah fell during her routine, it wouldn't have really been possible or honest from the show's point of view.
How much you want to bet that the one person who decided not to take a second attempt is Jasmine Masters?
It's like I was already funny.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Funny again.
I'm good. I'm in the top. What are you talking about?
Let's finish things off here with Valentina. Again, if we're talking about someone who is embracing her culture, she lip syncs a song completely in Spanish, ready to show you that, yes, she does indeed know the words. Brent, how'd you feel about Valentina finishing things off?
I thought this was great. I thought this was the definition of safe, though. I don't know what the hell is up with these queens and their shoes, but what were those shoes? Those shoes did not match that outfit, girl. What is she wearing there? That looks terrible, and I didn't realize going into the season how much of a shoe freak I've become, but it looks wrong to me. I do love the fact that she gave us a little bit of, basically, this is her version of Selena, and I know it's Valentina, but she's a big fan of Latin divas, and Selena was one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Latin divas ever, and she's channeling that, and she gives us something that we have never seen before. I've never seen somebody lip sync to a different language on RuPaul's Drag Race, and it was really, really great, and I thought that she moved like a star. That's the thing about Valentina, and this goes back to expectations, is Valentina to me is a star. She's almost, but not quite, above RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, and I she's not snooty like that, but like with her fans, like Valentina doesn't need RuPaul's Drag Race to have success. She's back because she wants the crown, because she wants to succeed, because she wants people to talk about her. And she really went out of her way, I thought, to give people something that they could take home with them with this performance.
She's just such a gorgeous human being.
Isn't she?
I just want to look at her. But yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the performance, it was definitely safe. Like, it was good. It was solid. She came out. She was, you know, like, did her thing. The mask callback. But again, not too much for me, like too much memes. And I liked that she did the song in Spanish. I thought that was pretty cool. You know, I think that maybe some of the judges were hoping that maybe it would be like half in English, half in Spanish, just because you could see like them sort of, I don't know, there were like cuts of the judges where you could tell they were kind of trying to listen almost. Like it felt like their ears were like tilted towards, like maybe there would be a little bit of understanding the lyrics that may have missed the mark on that. But I just had a lot of fun watching her move.
If Monique and Valentina were switched in the order, do you think that maybe the tops and bottoms would have been sussed out differently?
If Monique and Valentina would have been switched in the order?
Yeah, basically what I'm asking is, do we think that Valentina, while Monique benefited from going first, do we feel like Valentina, who also produced a high energy lip sync, might, you know, have been weighed down by the fact that so many other lip syncs went before her. So if they switched, Valentina would have gotten more of a boon from the fact she was the first to do it.
Yeah, I think that's, I think so.
I think it's a possibility. I think Monique's, on the other hand, to me, it was just so effervescent. Like, she was so funny. And you, like, you, it's hard to dislike Monique. Like, I think there are some people out there who don't like Valentina, but I don't know anybody who dislikes Monique. Like, she, every, the crowd and the judges are just like, they want her to succeed. And I think, like, you know, truth be told, the real tea, you guys, I think RuPaul knows that she made a mistake in not putting Monique in the top of the first episode of her season. Like, there was a little bit of an error there.
That's your damn sponge, Brent. You keep talking about it.
I'm a little bit of it. And I was like, so when eventually they named the winners and said, you're in the top two, I thought that Monique's reaction was like, yes, I finally done it. Because I don't think she was ever, was she in the top two of her season? Like, I don't think she ever was.
I think the closest was, I want to say it was the DragCon challenge, maybe, but she was never like outright a winner of the challenge. Yeah. And that was something that we prognosticated.
This was all about her.
Yeah, and that was something that we talked about preseason as well. It's like, we love Monique, but does Monique's drag, you know, reverberate with the judges? And I'm glad that we can see that now it has. The judges are on board with what Monique is putting out. So that hopefully, you know, answers that question and means that she'll be around for a longer amount of time than she was during season 10.
We'll see. We'll see.
All right, let's get into things. So we talked about this before, but top two are Monique and Trinity. Bottom two are Farrah and Jasmine. Let's get into the always interesting part of these All-Stars seasons, the one-on-one meetings that happen, and a bit of aside from the group at large, too, as Farrah and Jasmine both plead their case, or at least one of them does. Brent, what did you make, if anything, of, you know, the different tactics that Jasmine and Farrah took when it came to talking to Trinity and Monique as to who should stay?
This is the point in time where I actually started to root for them to keep Jasmine, because I couldn't stand Farrah. Like, I can take some crying. Like, I mean, we all cry. I've cried. Everyone's cried, okay? You were crying. You had a bad time. You fell. I get it. Cry. But to continue to cry, and then cry some more, and then cry some more, and then cry when you go to see Monique, and cry when you go to see Trinity. Bitch, shut up. We don't want to hear it. I don't want my drag queens crying, okay? Like, you're not a kid anymore. You said it yourself. You're a grown-up 25-year-old right now. Like, behave like that. It was really freaking annoying. On the other hand, you have somebody like Jasmine Masters, who I think could have possibly saved herself, again, if she gave a shit, which she doesn't. If she actually said to Trinity Taylor and Monique, you know what? If you keep me here, I promise you, I will keep you here if I'm in the top next week. If there's a challenge and I have the opportunity to make a chop, I will remember this. I will take this to heart, and I will not let you down. Like, if she had said that to her, I think there's a chance they could have kept her over Farrah, because Farrah wasn't doing herself any favors with her crying. But I mean, like, to me, the writing was on the wall at this point.
Well, I mean, neither of them were doing themselves any favors. Like, it was just to watch for different reasons. Like, I was going to cry along with Pheromone and then be mad at her. And then Jasmine was just, like, being Jasmine. And so it wasn't really pleasant to watch, necessarily. Just kind of sad. It's hard without being there, but just to me, watching from home, Jasmine Masters was like by far and away the worst. So, you know, I don't know what either of them could have said that would have really changed it. Like, Farrah could have cried the entire Lake Superior and she might have stayed over Jasmine, you know, like, I don't know.
You know what it reminds me of is last All-Star season when Kennedy was really talking up this idea of like, I really need all stars to sort of, you know, repudiate my image and sort of lift my public image in the eye of the Drag Race fandom. And I wouldn't say that Farrah is exactly speaking towards that, but I would say maybe Jasmine speaking the opposite of that. I feel like I keep beating the drum that, like, Jasmine Masters doesn't give an F as to how she does in All Stars whatsoever. She's going to be herself no matter what. I don't know if there's any personal growth coming from her journey in this, nor should there be. She's been able to make a career out of just being herself. I think that's the source behind her comment of, you know, whether I stay or go, it doesn't really matter. It's her basically saying, like, look, no matter how I place, right, I'm going to still be me and do what I do. And that obviously strikes a chord in Monique, who really wants to be about, you know, who, if you have the fight, and that's why she gloms onto that one point where Farrah gets so visibly angry that Monique's like, I want to see more of that feistiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the first lip sync for your legacy of the season. It is Emotion by Mariah Carey. Trinity versus Monique. I don't want to put words in both of your mouth. I think it's safe to say that Trinity won this one, especially when Miss Monique, I love you. You're so much fun. Keep your wig on your damn head. Please, please, for once, I love you, but you got to stop doing this, especially when there's nothing on underneath. Brent, what did you think about this?
That's the problem, isn't it? I mean, it begins and ends when she decides to take her wig off. That's it right there. I think that maybe she could have won up until then if she would have given us a lip sync the house down. And I know that she can do that. And she was totally prepared for this. She seemed like she was in it to win it. And then inexplicably, and by the way, for those people out there who don't know this, she did not have glitter underneath her hair. Okay. Mm-hmm. That came from Trinity Taylor. It just looked like it came from Monique because it happened at the same time. There's a moment in the song where they both had a, you know, wow moment. And Monique inexplicably decided to rip her wig off without another wig underneath. And Trinity had glitter come out of her handkerchief that she was holding on to. So I don't understand Monique's thought process on this. It's been shown on RuPaul's Drag Race. If you take your wig off and you don't have a wig underneath, that RuPaul hates it. She absolutely hates it. Michelle hates it. The public hates it. And not only that, it's not like you're giving a Sasha Velour contoured baldness. It's not that at all. When she takes her wig off, all of a sudden, she's Kevin again. That's Monique's real name. She's Kevin with that boy hair there. It's such an assault to my eyeballs. I love that phrase of yours with Liana. It's such an assault to me because it's like, it just doesn't look right. It makes my skin crawl a little bit even. Like, I didn't feel good watching her the minute she took off that wig. And I did up until then, which is what cinched it for Trinity for me. I love, I listened to another recapper, Jimmy Pink, on YouTube, who said that she thought this lip sync was actually pretty close. She understood why the judges went the way they did. But she didn't think that Trinity won it hands down because the song was, you know, give me emotion or so emotional or whatever. And you look at her face and it's not moving.
that's the thing, though, is that I actually felt like what Trinity might not have been able to produce on her face, she physicalized it. I think by far the winning moment of this lip sync was during those whistle notes. And there's one whistle like riff down. And that's when Trinity sort of like dribbles her hands down and melts to the floor. And that's just, again, if we're talking about timing and just well-punctuated moments like that, clinched it, in my opinion.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I think that in combination, obviously, with I can't call it a reveal, the wig flying into the rafters moment.
She's got an arm, by the way. Like, she should go out for like professional, like Major League Baseball if drag doesn't work out. Because that's a good, like, what, 16, 20 feet in the air?
Oh my
that
god!
That was amazing. I love the judges kept looking at it, Liana. Like they were so into it. They stopped looking at the lip sync and they're looking at the wig. And Latrice is like, "You think that what goes up must come down? Nope."
And I just also love this idea of like after the lip sync, before they can move on to the judgings, you know, some of the crew members have to like go up and get a ring.
Rizzo has to get the big old broomstick and get down the wig.
Love it that RuPaul called her out and said, you know, girl, you need to like get some duct tape or something or some staplers or something. Because like, I hope everybody, whoever goes on Drag Race again, if you don't have a wig underneath your wig and you decide to take it off, you should be banished from the show right then and there. I'm actually like, Monique, you're playing with fire when you do shit like that.
Or at least rose petals, something.
Something.
Ugh.
So while Monique does try to make up for it by getting the emotion into her crotch, it's Trinity who ends up clinching this first victory. She gets her own emotional ways about it because she's happy to start off on such a good note. But this means she has to send someone home. Liana, any surprise in her choice of Jasmine?
No.
Okay.
No, I wasn't surprised at all. I was like, okay, Jasmine girl, bye.
Yeah, they were on the same season together, for heaven's sake. So, like, you knew that, like, she already had an ace in the hole. And, like, it was clear to us, like, again, that was unedited, I'm assuming, Jasmine's routine. She literally bombed. And Farrah at least had a fully realized concept. Even though she fell, she at least cared about being there. And I think there's no universe where Farrah, if she actually ends up in the top and ends up winning a lip sync, where she's going to eliminate Trinity. Never in a million years would she do that. So I think that this was a clear call for Trinity to eliminate Jasmine here.
It's super interesting where, you know, Jasmine and Trinity are talking. Trinity wants to go with sort of the de facto rules that have happened with All-Stars regulations of let's eliminate the weak link. And Jasmine's like, yep, let's get rid of the weak link. I'm going to give you, you know, run for your money. But in actuality, I think if you're looking to the routines, I think Jasmine's was indeed the weakest. So she can sort of...
It really was.
Yeah, she can use that logic as well. So, I mean, we say goodbye to Jasmine Masters. I will say, I don't think we were all necessarily... that bullish on her to begin with. In fact, she went unpicked in our draft. I will say I still had fun watching her crazy ass, even if it was for an hour and a half of Drag Race. Here's something I want to do new to this season. Because All Stars is all about reputations, and we talk about this at the end of every All Star season, but I want to track it throughout. So let's go around the horn here. Do you think that through her one episode tenure on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars, has Jasmine Masters' reputation in the Drag Race community increased, or I guess should say thumbs up, thumbs down, or no change based on her returning to Drag Race? Liana, let's start with you.
I'm going to go with no change. I think it's really funny that, you know, we talked a lot this episode about people really, the queens really doing their brand, you know, Monique Hart with the cow and, you know, Monet with the sponges. Jasmine was really the most on brand with her, like, I don't give an F attitude, because she did it throughout the whole episode and throughout her whole time on All-Stars season 4. So I feel like her reputation's not really going to change. I mean, Jasmine did Jasmine.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I mean, if anything, it's probably a little bit down. It's certainly not up, but I think it's probably no change. Everybody who liked Jasmine Masters before, still going to like her. She's still got her fans at her place. And, you know, when she performs, she's still going to be, what, funny in her universe of funny. But she didn't need RuPaul's Drag Race. And RuPaul's Drag Race really, I'm sorry, I do take the show to task by asking her back. Like, why did you ask her back? To me, it was clear from her time on Drag Race originally, she didn't give an F about the show. She really doesn't care about the show. She doesn't care about us as the fans. She does. I'm sorry, she doesn't. You can't tell me she cares about the fans when she comes out looking in a suit that she's worn before that's not even pressed with the same damn shoes that she had for an entrance look. Like, she doesn't give a shit about us. So why did you ask her back? I'm annoyed at that, but she's gone, so... whatever. We get to see 9 more queens who really do want to be there battle it out.
Yeah, I'm going to say no change. Actually, I might slightly go towards thumbs up just because she's been seen by a bigger audience, considering how large the Drag Race audience has become now. And maybe they're not completely knowledgeable as to, you know, who she is. They at least got to see the jush of it all, even though it wasn't necessarily laugh out loud funny on the screen. But I do agree that just like Jasmine, I feel like fans of Jasmine, myself included, will say, well, that's Jasmine being Jasmine. You like her warts and all for what she's able to provide. So it was cool to see her back, considering that, as Liana pointed out, I think it was going to be an impossibility in any Drag Race fan's mind until about a few months ago. So to see the impossible become possible was interesting, even if it was only for one episode.
Oh, Jasmine.
So we move on into next week, where, you know, Pheromone is looking to recover. We have some more queens looking to improve themselves. I'm sure the 4 queens that were marked safe might not have been as happy about it, considering that these are ultra competitive queens. Next week, we have a really interesting thing. It looks like we're sort of doing a callback to the, like, Handmaids to Kitty Girls challenge at the halfway point of season 3, where I think they're forming 2 musical groups, and they're auditioning to be part of the new musical group. I think it's called Henny, featuring Stacey Lane Matthews making her return to Drag Race.
Yes, very meta. I love it, Mike.
Well, especially because Ru foreshadowed it. I don't know if you noticed during her message to the queens on the video screen, she said, "What the F is a Heather?" Which I believe Stacey said iconically during an Untucked in season 3. So she was really the master of foreshadowing there.
Ugh. So good. Foreshadowing, 3 shadowing. I'm here for all the shadowing.
Eye shadowing. It's all here. So this was a really fun premiere. I'm really excited to see where we go from here. Again, this cast is just so kinetic that I can watch them just sort of just mingle in any way possible. Looks like Farrah and Gia are really going to get into it next week, which it'll be interesting to see the little kitten get claws. So that'll be very fun to watch. And I can't wait to talk to the two of you next week about it all. Let's go around the horn and give your social media. And if you want to plug anything in particular, Brent, let's start with you.
You can find me at One Lucky Gay. That's one spelled out, O-N-E-L-U-C-K-Y-G-A-Y, across all platforms, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. I am going to be doing a end-of-the-year podcast with Taryn Armstrong and Melissa Denny, recapping Big Brother for the entire year, and I'm sure I'm going to have some shit to say.
How's that?
Yes, if you put Big Brother and Brent together, especially the past few months, you will, much like Jasmine Masters, have something to say.
Listen, I'm going to try to make sure that Rob is not pulling his hair out by the end. I don't want angry reality show contestants texting him in the middle of the night going, "Why are you employing this guy? He's such an ass."
I say that every podcast to Rob. Actually, I just texted him right now.
This is awkward.
Awkward.
So I am on social media at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. And this past week for the RHAP BNB, Mike was not with us, but we had such a fun time. I spoke with Amon Adwin, who you guys have heard on this podcast before, talking about RuPaul's Drag Race, and Puya Zandvakili, and the three of us, oh my gosh, talked about Survivor Balls, and it was a blast. And if you haven't checked it out and you watch Survivor, do it. It's so much fun, I promise.
Especially That's if cool. you love
so balls. Mike wasn't on the BNB. Is that why the downloads were much higher this week?
Oh. Yes, I know. I was like, we finally got rid of him.
The Boycott Blue movement was really in full swing. Yeah. And they're like, oh, great. Coast is clear. Let's run in and grab as much as we can before he comes back.
going out of business sale.
Exactly. A fire sale. So you can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. As Liana mentioned, I was not on the BNB this week because I got to come on and do my usual random silliness with Rob Cesternino for hours at a time on the feedback
show. I'm so looking forward to that. Has it dropped yet?
Has dropped. It's almost 3 hours, but it will fly through like a bird. We talk through everything under the sun. I always have a great time talking with Rob, so be sure to check that out. As well as my interviews for Survivor and Top Chef on Parade Magazine, also doing the Top Chef here on Reality TV or Hap Ups. Wrote about some Star Trek Discovery for Hollywood Reporter this past week because the season 2 trailer just came out. So there's lots of things in the hopper as we move into this Holoslay season. And before, we'll provide you with one more present underneath the tree next weekend as we talk about episode 2 of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4. I personally cannot wait. Let us know your thoughts about the season, about the queens, basically about anything Drag Race related. If you want to pull a at Dibs on the Gibbs and send us some reads as well. The library, we can keep it open for additional hours. We'll say this is finals week where we can sort of keep it open and extended. So be sure to send all that. We always appreciate any feedback you guys may leave and you guys may leave. And we hope you have fun listening to us as much as fun as we have talking about this fantastic show. That's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week talking about episode 2 with Stacey Lane, Brian Matthews in tow. But for now, you may sashay away. Bye!